This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Etopia Media's California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Dana Cody, who's executive director of the Life Legal Defense Foundation and an attorney involved in challenging Proposition 71 in the courts. Welcome to California Politics Today.
Thank you.
When we last spoke, you were getting ready to go contest a consolidation motion being brought by California Attorney General Bill Lockyer to consolidate the case that you're bringing against Proposition 71 with another case that's being brought against it. Where was that case heard, and what was the decision?
The case was heard in the Alameda Superior Court at the Hayward Hall of Justice.
Right, and this was last week, right?
That was on August the 4th.
August the 4th, right.
And basically, we argued that only one issue of about 8 or 10 was common to the Sacramento bond action.
Right.
And since it didn't predominate their lawsuit, they should not be consolidated.
So in other words, they're bringing a reverse validation action,
right,
which calls for the blocking the sale of the bonds, and you were bringing action under Article 16, Section 3 of the California Constitution, saying that it was unconstitutional to set up a body to spend money that wasn't under the control of the state of California.
Exactly.
All right, and so you made your argument to the judge. What did and did Mr. Llewellyn from make his argument?
Yes, he did, and he basically, made the point that his client is in Sacramento, and that there's a statute in, it was recently enacted, I guess it was January of this year, and I don't remember the statute number, but it says that a bond action has to be brought in Sacramento. And we both made the point that none of the cases that the Attorney General cited were on point, but the Attorney General argued, well, Your Honor, you're on firm ground, and obviously she agreed with the Attorney General.
Did it seem to you that it was, I don't know what the protocol is of second-guessing the motivation of judges, but did you feel she was relating to the law or to other political considerations about what she thought, what kind of decision she thought she might have to, she ought to end up with?
Well, I don't know that much about the judge, to be honest with you, and, I felt like she was listening to what we had to say.
Right.
She just didn't agree with us.
Okay.
And I think the downside to the consolidation is that we're going to be caught up in all these issues that we have nothing to do with. So, I guess it'll be a waste of time for us as far as pretrial motions or...
Well, on that subject, I guess on that subject, the immediate question that comes to mind now is: this is a single case. Is this change your relationship of you as an attorney for your clients and Mr. Llewellyn for his? Are you necessarily going to have to collaborate in this consolidated case? And have you done anything in that direction yet?
We haven't collaborated yet. I think we will with respect to the one issue that's common to our lawsuit.
Which is?
Which is the Article 16, Section 3 challenge that, the ICOC is not under the exclusive management control of the state.
Right. Now, I understood he was willing to withdraw that if it would make the case work, if it would allow him to keep the case separate.
Right.
But now that they have been consolidated, I guess he never had to make good on that, so he's still bringing the case on that grounds. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
So does that mean that you'll cooperate around that constitutional question, and he'll carry on with his arguments for the invalidation of the bond action while you don't?
Pretty much, yes. I mean, I have never dealt with the bond invalidation or validation action. So,
right.
Anything that is litigated in that regard is new to me.
Okay.
So, but again, we made the point. That's not what we're doing here. We're just saying that it doesn't matter if it's bonds or any government funding in the state treasury, they're not entitled to it. And so I would imagine we'd have to collaborate.
So do you have any plans to get together by phone or otherwise and talk over what you're going to do?
Not yet. No, not yet. I think that the next thing we'll do is we'll initiate some discovery. And the order doesn't take effect until after September the 1st. So that kind of puts things on hold for a while. The purpose for that was allow the summons, it has to be published pursuant to the bond invalidation action to, you know, run its course to make sure that no one else wants to, you know, raise any legal issues with regard to the bonds that may be issued.
Say a little bit more. Apparently, you are getting involved in the bond invalidation law, in spite of yourself, possibly.
Right, exactly, because what the judge said is that basically, even though ours was not a bond invalidation action,
right,
now it is.
Right.
So, magically, it's a bond invalidation action.
Does that sort of supersede yours? Has this become a single bond invalidation action with you as a co-plaintiff, essentially?
Well, the cases are consolidated for all purposes,
right,
to my reading of the order. So, I guess in a way it does. I mean,
Or is what the relief that you're asking for and the relief that he's asking for become items in the consolidated list of reliefs you're asking for?
Right. There'll be one decision with respect to all the issues raised in both of our lawsuits. And, you know, I have to admit that it's confusing to me, and I think the reason it's confusing is because the cases shouldn't have been consolidated, and so, you know, we don't know the answers to all those questions.
Because you were essentially asking to enjoin the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee from spending any money.
Right.
And he was asking the court to invalidate their right to issue bonds.
Right.
And were one or both of you saying that the existence of the ICOC was unconstitutional and it had to have no standing at all or no existence?
We were saying that very strongly, and yes, his one cause of action did state something, you know, very similar.
So both of you are asking for relief in the form of declaring the ICOC as not a valid legal entity and that ought not to have any legal existence. Is that fair to say? You're both asking for that?
Yes, we both are, but, you know, for different reasons.
Right. So does that then mean that the judge can decide to grant or not grant grant your request on your grounds or on his grounds or both grounds, or that the judge can declare it neither grounds strong enough and say that it does have a right to exist and it does have a right to sell the bonds and it does have a right to sell them?
Yes, he can do all those things.
Okay, and is this going to involve a jury, or is it merely a question, or only a question of law, and therefore the judge is going to be the sole determiner of the law, as the judges are, and there won't be a jury trial here?
As it stands right now, I think it's pretty much just a question of law.
Okay.
I mean, I guess when we get into discovery, if there are things discovered that are, you know, factually disputed, then
right,
it may become more questions of fact, but I don't see that happening. I mean, I think with respect to our cause of action, the Article 16, Section 3 cause of action, if the judge decides that in our favor, that pretty much takes care of it, because if they're, you know, if they're not a state entity, then they don't have the right to issue bonds.
Right. Say more about this discovery, or maybe even before that, what this September 1st deadline is. I understood from the tentative ruling that came out on August 3rd,
mm-hmm,
that there was going to be a case management conference on August 25th.
Yes.
And then I saw in other documents that that had been rescheduled for October 24th, and then that was rescheduled to September 15th. Did I follow that right? And is it now it's September 15th?
No.
Why all this back and forthing on the case management conference?
Well, just because of you know, different attorneys' schedules,
right,
and then I'm not sure how the October date was arrived at, because I wasn't in on that conversation. One of the other attorneys was with the Attorney General's office.
Right.
But when the, you know, at the hearing, one of the questions I had was, you know, what about this summons? Does this now, you know, apply to us? Yes, it does.
What kind of summons was this?
This is the summons that needed to be published pursuant to the bond invalidation action.
Right.
The judge says that our lawsuit has now morphed into a bond validation action, then we need to publish publicly a summons. It needs to be in a newspaper for a certain period of time.
When we say, when you say we, do you mean you, the attorneys for the consolidated case, or you, the attorneys for your case?
Well, it would have been the attorneys just for the bond case, but since the judge held that now ours is a bond invalidation action,
right?
I said, how do we do that? The time has passed. And she said, well, the publication of the summons that's happening in the Sacramento court pursuant to Mr. Llewellyn's lawsuit,
right,
is now applies to your case, and therefore the time period that that summons needs to be published will end on August the 31st.
Okay. And was that when it was planned? Is that when it was scheduled to expire in any event?
Yes.
So you've been sort of added on as a co.
Yes.
A co-plaintiff, and the purpose of that summons again was to do what?
It's to give anybody, any interested person, any member of the public, a chance to say, hey, we don't think the ICOC should be able to issue bonds. And the reason for that is that if the bonds are validated or if they're invalidated, it's a final judgment. Nobody can go back after that.
So it's a little like at the wedding, anyone say any reason why this couple
exactly
shouldn't be married or forever hold
now
your peace.
Forever hold your peace.
And so this is a similar kind of legal notice saying that if you want to get on board the argument that the bond sale should be invalidated, or validated for that matter, presumably,
mm-hmm,
you need to file papers before the end of by August 31st.
Right.
Do you expect anyone will? Or have you heard anything that anyone will?
I haven't heard anything from anybody that they will.
Okay, and the importance of that deadline is that what is it that can't happen until that deadline's expired?
When that deadline expires, then both cases, which are now consolidated in Alameda County, will move forward. And I think at that time, the Attorney General will probably refile their motion for judgment on the pleadings, and then that will be related to the merits of the case.
And what about the September 15th case management conference?
The case management conference is just like kind of like a status conference. You know, what's going on? Has everything?
Does the Attorney General have to wait for that time to file his motion for a summary judgment?
No.
But he does have to wait until August 31st.
Yes.
So presumably he could file that motion for a summary judgment on the merits of the case, the consolidated case, as early as September 1st, if that's a work day.
Yes, presumably. Yes. And part of the reason for the case management conference is so that the judge knows, hey, are you moving forward with this case? Will there be pretrial motions? It kind of helps the court plan their calendar, because obviously, they have many cases, and they need to know what's going on.
Right. There's no way that the judge would make a decision on the filing of the Attorney General after August 31st to issue a summary judgment before the September 15th case management conference.
Just by virtue of the fact that, you know, because of due process, proper notice has to be given and all that.
So if he files it, he can file it any time he wants after August 31st, but his motion won't be heard until after the September 15th case management conference, when you will, the judge and both and parties and representation on both for both parties now,
right,
will explain when they want to have that hearing.
Right.
Okay. All right. So everything. So nothing is. No, nothing could be decided before September 15th at this point.
No, not at this point.
Okay. I interviewed Franklin Sands, who's a representative in Florida today. He's planning on introducing a bill next year that would provide $150 million over 10 years for embryonic stem cell research in Florida of the kind involving embryos that won't be used by people who've created them for in vitro fertilization purposes,
mm-hmm,
and it sounded like from his discussion that this spending will be under an agency that will be under the control of the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Now they don't have the same Chapter 16, Section 3 rule, and I asked him if he took any inspiration one way or another from Prop 71, and he said he hadn't. But I'm just wondering whether you think that. In light of, in particular, the case that you're bringing, efforts in other states to fund on the state level embryonic stem cell research might go out of their way, or at least take cognizance of what you've done, and make sure that the authority to spend to raise and spend the money belongs to the state, so that your argument couldn't be made in these other cases.
Well, I think that other states definitely will. You know, I used to work for the legislature, and we always say, as California goes, so goes the nation. And
right.
I think that other states are probably waiting, and you know, people that want to promote such research will, you know, I'm sure they'll, in fact, they have, to my understanding, they have a national coalition. So
it's to my understanding that something called STEMPAC was set up today.
Yes,
to raise money to oppose legislatively.
Yeah, they definitely have
people.
an active agenda to see this happen nationwide. And
does that, what would you have done if California, there's no reason now why California, I just thought of the possibility, if your case succeeds on the grounds that you brought, whether the state of California could in fact empower the Department of Health Services to spend $3 billion in embryonic stem cell research. And as long as it was under the authority of the State Department of Health Services rather than the independent Citizens Oversight Committee. Would that...
I think that that would be... I think that would be a possibility. I mean, again, this gets back to, you know, we keep hearing how there's this agenda behind this lawsuit, you know, which admittedly we oppose embryonic stem cell research, but I guess the downside of our litigation is that even if we win, then they can go back to the legislature and say, okay, you know, the voters passed this thing. We want to be under the control of the state. Please help us, you know, reinitiate this sort of research.
As I understand it, well, I'm not sure how it was going to be. State Senator Deborah Ortiz, who later became a supporter of Prop 71 and later became a proponent of modifying Proposition 71, before either of those things happened, had introduced legislation to fund embryonic stem cell research in California, I think at about $1 billion.
Right.
And was that under the provisions of her original proposal, would it have been under the direct control of the state of California, or would there have been this independent Citizens Oversight Committee, which, as I understand it, was a creation of Prop 71?
Yeah, to my understanding, it would have been under the control of the state. And I think that the reason that her legislation didn't pass is because it's not something that's generally popular. I mean, it is controversial. And I think that, you know, the Prop 71 campaign was successful in sort of recharacterizing the debate, and
right.
That's why they got the voters to approve their initiative.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think it's a definite possibility that even if we win, that the legislature will, you know, do what they need to do. I mean, let's face it, looking at who's involved with just the, you know, Prop 71 as it is, it's people that are already receiving public money, universities, they want more public money. I mean, you always have to follow the money.
Right.
And they're not going to give up because it's their bread and butter. You know, for whatever reason, it seems like it's much easier to get money from the state than it is, at least with respect to stem cell research, from venture capitalists, which, to me, that's where it should come from. You know, even though I don't support embryonic stem cell research, people that do, if they want to fund it, let them do it privately. It's just so tiresome to just constantly be paying taxes, and
let me ask you a question that I'm going to try to get some comment on from different participants in this issue. The South Koreans, under the leadership of Dr. Hwang at Seoul National University, and reportedly with an expenditure of $200,000, were able to create, through the process of somatic cell nuclear transfer that's enshrined in the California Constitution under Prop 71, create stem cells based on the genetic material that came from potential patients who had either diseases or injuries that are envisioned as being treatable through embryonic stem cell research. They did that for $200,000. You've just pointed out your preference within your dispreference for private money to finance this research. I read 2 days ago that Thomas Dolby and his wife gave the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee $5 million as a gift. I'm curious to know what you think about why, given 25 times as much money as it took the South Koreans to do what's admittedly the second stage of embryonic stem cell research after the use of discarded embryos, a more difficult and more advanced step in the process is to create customized embryonic stem cells, which the Koreans did for $200,000. And the ICOC and the CIRM, which now apparently must have $5 million in its treasury, why it hasn't done the same thing already, if rather than apparently use that money to organize itself for, among other things, I imagine, to fight your lawsuit.
Right. I can't answer that question. I mean, it's just really, to me, the Institute, the ICOC, they've hired PR people. You know, I noticed at the hearing last week that their attorney was sitting in the audience. I'm sure he was getting paid to sit there, even though he wasn't participating. I mean, I have no idea why they can't do what they need to do with the money that they have. I liken it to public education. I mean, public education has no competition, and everybody wants their children to be educated, and they use the public schools, the government schools. You know, I used to work for the Ed Committee, and I know how much per year public education gets per student, and I can assure you that my son, when he went to private school, I could have sent him and one other person for what they get every year, but yet they never have enough money. And it's because they have no competition. And I think that with the stem cell issue, venture capitalists don't want to fund it because it is controversial and, you know, it's in its early stages. And really, embryonic shows no promise from what I've read.
Well, one other point on the following the money aspect. I read also a report in the last few days saying that biotech stocks like Stem Cell Inc. And Geron rose in response to Senator Frist's statement that he would support a modified version, an appropriately corrected version of H.R. 810, which would allow for embryonic stem cell research on discarded embryos. What do you see as the connection between the political debate about this and political maneuvering in legislatures, the litigation that you and Mr. Llewellyn are bringing, and the stock price of the startup and larger biotech companies that stand to benefit from the $3 billion in research funds that Prop 71 would make available to them and others?
Well, I mean, I really have no idea. I'm no financial genius by any means. But I would imagine if the government at the federal level is going to get behind this, they're going to contract with somebody. Who knows? Maybe they have good lobbyists. I don't know. The bottom line for me, though, I mean, as much as I don't like to pay taxes, is we're creating life, or we're taking life that's been created to destroy and experiment with it, and that's the slippery slope that I see, and I don't like it, and I don't, you know, I definitely don't want to pay for it as a taxpayer at the state level or at the federal level.
Well, let me, you having said that, let me try to wrap up with this discussion that you were accused by Mr. You're not by name, but generically, by Robert Klein in his appearance on California Connected, as using constitutional arguments as fronts for your primarily, what he considers primarily religious arguments. It just sounds to me like you've made a religious argument in support of your constitutionally argued case that this ought not to happen. What do you say about that?
Yeah, well, privately, I do have religious objections to stem cell research, and I could even agree with Mr. Klein that it's a front if I made my my views about stem cell research a secret. I mean, I've said this before. If anybody wants to know what our foundation's views are on stem cell research, they can get on our website. That aside, we still have rights as citizens to have viewpoints on other issues like taxes and other things.
On that subject of the foundation, is you were talking about the Life Legal Defense Foundation.
Right.
What's its relationship to this case? You're the executive director of Life Legal Defense Foundation.
Right.
And the plaintiffs in this case are People's Advocate. Is that right?
Yes, they're taxpayer groups.
Right. So are they funding your litigation, or is the Life Legal Defense Foundation providing? Who's doing that?
We're funding it. We're a nonprofit. The Life Legal Defense Foundation is funding it.
So it's not costing People's Advocate anything.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
No.
Just wanted to.
In
terms of following the money, I wanted to follow that part of the money as well.
Right. And. Admittedly, we oppose embryonic stem cell research because we think it destroys human life, and our mission is to protect human life. But aside from that, the lawsuit itself doesn't raise any of these issues. It's merely about whether or not the ICOC is under the exclusive management control of the state.
You're not asking the courts to invalidate Proposition 71 because. This kind of research destroys innocent human life. That's not what you're asking.
No, you believe that,
but you're not asking.
That's not what we're asking for in court. We're asking the court to invalidate the ICOC because they're not under the exclusive management control of the state. You know, if you took Mr. Klein's thinking, as I understand it, to its logical conclusion, then anybody who opposes anything for any reason, based on any sort of moral code, whether it's religious or just sincerely held belief system, they have no right to raise any other issues in the courts. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me.
So in fact, if you believe that the war in Iraq was wrong because it destroyed innocent human life, for example, but you argued in court that it was unconstitutional because it violated the War Powers Act. It was illegal mm-hmm. because it violated the War Powers Act.
Mm-hmm.
That would be analogous to illegitimate as well as what you're
doing. Right, because our claims about the exclusive management control under the exclusive management control of the state issue are totally legitimate. Just because I have a religious belief doesn't make them illegitimate. And in fact, one of the clients has said that he doesn't necessarily oppose stem cell research, embryonic or otherwise. He just doesn't want to pay for it.
So, and in fact then, if things had gone the way Senator Ortiz originally planned, or should you succeed and another effort is launched to pass legislation mm-hmm. through the California legislature to do this, and it's done in a way that puts the entire process under the complete control of the state of California,
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't be back in court suing, at least on these grounds, would you?
No, absolutely not.
Okay. All right. I want to thank you for once again giving us a complete and detailed exposition of your views on this. And I'm sure sometime around, when the Attorney General files his motion for summary judgment, we can talk again, or after the September 15th case management conference, whichever comes first.
Right.
Thanks very much for your time.
Okay, thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.